Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, May 26, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How's it going?
It comes and it goes, Jeff, but today I'm here.
You know, I'll take it as I can get it, so I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for being here. John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm particularly happy this morning. San Jose Sharks won last night.
Yeah.
Sports ball or sports puck?
As my son says, it is the ball that is fully evolved. It no longer needs air.
Okay, so sports puck?
You got it.
I really did have to work through that. There's people shaking their heads thinking, what, really? Is he making a joke? No, really. That's how I am. Hey, so I figured we could start today with a little bit of a discussion about Apple's potential entry into the talking home market or talking to your home market. The listening home market, yeah. So we have Amazon Echo, and soon we will have Google Home. And now there's word that Apple is going to make their own Siri speaker sort of thing that would be along the same line. So a device that sits in your home and just listens. And then when you issue commands, it processes those spoken commands and then responds appropriately, like turning on or off the lights, ordering dinner, making movies happen, things like that.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people, geeks and non-geeks alike, who have Echo, and every single one of them is in love with the thing. But in addition to everything you mentioned, things like the simplest things that become so important. A friend of mine was telling me this weekend, he has one, and when he keeps it in his kitchen, as many people do, because that tends to be kind of the central, you know, point of your home, at least mm-hmm. interacting. And he says it's awesome because he can say, you know, hey, Alexa, set a timer for 10 minutes. And it'll set a timer. And then he can say, and Siri can't do this, he can say, Alexa, set another timer for 12 minutes. And then he can ask, hey, Alexa, how much time's left on that first timer? And it'll answer. And he can also say, add bread. You know, and he doesn't even have to say add bread to my grocery list. It understands, oh, yeah, okay, you want to add bread, you know, to your grocery list.
Can you do something like, I'm out of dishwasher detergent. Can you order me more?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I may have to have one of these.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I've recently become convinced of that I can't believe I don't have one.
I can't believe I don't have one either.
You know, what's the context here for me is that when you see these kinds of devices in the past reflected in science fiction movies, it's always very reliable, and it's always a very elegant solution to a problem, and it's always a very exciting future. Sometimes the future doesn't pan out quite the way we like, but this one sounds like it's a winner.
I have not, it's funny that you mentioned that. I have not heard anyone that I know personally complain about the, you know, inconsistency or reliability of Alexa, which is the name of the thing in Amazon Echo. My mind's a little blown right now because it seems to be, that would be the thing you would talk about was, oh, I told Alexa to do this. And suddenly, you know, 45 pairs of underwear showed up at my door.
Right.
That story doesn't get told. So, huh.
Yeah. How about that? You know, when Alexa was, or Amazon Echo was first announced, I wasn't that interested. I was, at least as a consumer, I was very interested in the technology. I was very interested in what Amazon was doing, but I had no interest in getting an Echo. But time has passed. And now, if Echo cost $99, I would buy one without even thinking, even knowing that it's always listening and Amazon's collecting all this information. I would drop the $99 on that thing and set it up and and so use the crap out of that.
Listening, there's no trigger event or Hey Siri or flag.
No, there is. There's you address it as Alexa. That's its name.
Or then it starts listening, but before that,
well, it has to listen all the time. Otherwise, how will it know you said Hey Alexa?
Yeah. Well, it has to listen all the time to listen to the prompt, but it may not be passing on the conversation around it.
That's
back
right.
To Google, right?
Back to Amazon.
Back to Amazon. So we know that, right? Do we know that?
No. We don't. I don't know. The Amazon may have been very clear about this. I don't know. We sort of did a weird thing today because Brian actually wrote the article yesterday about the privacy implications of Apple doing this and how Apple is kind of the company we want to do this. But because they're the company we want to do this, it actually makes it difficult for Apple to do this, right? Because it means all these walls of privacy, at least in my mind, would have to come down in order for Apple to do this effectively. My guess is the people at Apple, Brian's not the first one to think of this. He's a smart guy and Apple also has smart people working there. So, that's really the trick. But, I've seen so many articles, especially in the last week or two, Mark Cantor posted something on Facebook and, what's his face? The Bob Lefsetz was ranting about this, saying, "Oh, Apple missed the opportunity here." It's like, they weren't first, is what you're saying. And guess what? They weren't first with a smartphone. They weren't first with a computer. They weren't first with anything.
They certainly weren't first with a portable media player.
Yeah. How'd that work out? Right.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it saved the company is what it did. Yeah, so it means is these are people that have these devices and are ecstatic over them and want Apple to create it. And I could see where, you get an Alexa or an Echo and you love it. And then you say, well, I wish Apple would make something like this. How come they haven't yet? And well, the answer is, well, that's not Apple. That's not how Apple rolls.
No. Yeah, they get into a market after they watch what everyone else has done, and then they decide how to do it right. Right. I mean, correct.
Yeah.
What's going on here, I think, is a trade between the local level of intelligence and the remote connectivity of the cloud and intelligence there. Our devices for $99 aren't very powerful, so they depend on the intelligence of the server on the other end in the cloud to analyze your results, and that's the market situation. But one can imagine in the science fiction scenario of a self-contained family service robot that had such monstrous intelligence that it could keep all this information local. It didn't have to appeal to the internet, and that's the trade we're facing right now, and the trade that Apple's facing too.
For years we've been saying, for different reasons, I wish Apple would release a home server appliance, and they like the time capsule is a tease at that. It does one thing poorly.
Oh, I've been on that bandwagon, Dave. I don't know if I started it or not, but
yeah, right. Yeah. Well, and for good reason, right? We want a home media server from Apple, but we can't get that. So we have, Synology and Drobo to an extent, or you set up a Mac Mini and like there's all these things that we've all done to solve that problem, but probably would have just done them Apple's way if Apple shipped us that. And if Apple were to ship us that, that machine could also help with some of this, right? Because you could say,
a little device that just reaches out and touches all your devices and backs them up locally.
And also keeps part of what would make a Siri appliance in my kitchen, valuable to me is it knowing a lot of things about me so that it has some context to what I'm asking it to do. If I say, call Lisa, it needs to know that, well, there's many Lisas in my life, but there's one that I talk to a lot. Maybe that's the one to go to. And certainly more complex things than that. But if you had a device in your home that all your devices talk to and that collected all of that information in one place, it's still in your house. So it solves that we're not holding on to your data. And it could still use the cloud to give it hints about things. Like, you know, if you need that, if you need the cloud for even faster voice processing and more robust voice processing, it could do that and then hand that kind of data back to you, whatever your home server is, that could then apply it to your specific data. And then, you know, I think it's possible. Of course, it means that instead of it being the $99 you want, Jeff, or the $200 that Amazon is charging, suddenly now we're at $1,500, you know?
You know what I call that, Dave?
What's that?
Hell in a closet.
Yeah, hell in a closet. That's what we want. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what
that's
we want.
That's one way to solve this. It's not the only way, but it's one way.
Right. Alternatively, I want C-3PO and R2-D2 to shadow me and take care of stuff for me.
Why alternatively? I think we can have both.
All right. I'm fine having both. Yeah. Okay. Now, one thing that I just want to make sure listeners are picking up on. We've been talking about the biggest hurdle that Apple is going to have in competing with Amazon and Google in giving us an appliance that listens to what we're saying and then does things for us. Because Apple isn't going to be harvesting our data in the same way that Amazon and Google can. Therefore, the whatever it is that Apple makes is going to be at a disadvantage, potentially.
So we're going to play a game here called Who Do You Trust?
Well, that's the key, right?
Right. And how much convenience are you willing to give up in the name of privacy? Or how much privacy are you willing to give up in the name of convenience?
Yep.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see if... I mean, I think it's probably... safe to assume that Apple has been playing with this idea. It certainly makes sense. They have a lot of the tech that would sort of, you know, dance around it. So, sure, they played with it, but they play with a lot of things that we never see.
True.
So my curiosity is around, you know, has Apple figured out a way to do something like this that they feel good about? And if so, you know, what's that going to look like? I can't wait to see.
I can't wait to see either. And in the meantime, we now know what my price point is for exchanging privacy for convenience, and it's $99.
That's it. Less than a C-note.
Less than a C-note. That's right. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm excited to see what Apple announces at WWDC and to see if we actually really do get a Siri speaker announcement. That would be kind of cool. The other thing I want to talk about today, John, we both have been very busy behind the scenes, and we've both been spending a lot of time working with a specific display, Hewlett-Packard's NV34C, and I think it's time for us to talk about that.
And what a glorious display it is, too. When I first saw it, I wrote about it in January when I was doing news one day. And I wrote about it, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, my goodness, I have to have one of those. This is a 34-inch diagonal display that's not quite 4K. It's 3440 by 1440. It's curved. It's deliciously curved. And that's a subject in itself. Is why is it curved the way it's curved, and how much curvature can you put in a device like this, and how much curvature should you have, and why does it look so cool, and does it have anything to do with how far you sit from it? And no, it doesn't. But it helps a little bit because the display is the size of the USS Nimitz flight deck. And it's got a very stable stand, and I've been enjoying using it since February 19th. And I've got a massive 6-page review coming of it.
And I'm going to follow that up with a video review
very soon. So basically, it's an awesome display for everyday Mac user. It's DisplayPort, single cable. You can drive it with just about any Mac. The gentle curvature is not designed to keep the edges equidistant from your face. as the center, but it does provide a sort of a pleasant visual experience. It moves the edges about 2 inches closer to you. You wouldn't want the curvature to be any greater than that, and it can't be curved any greater than that. I talked to Hewlett-Packard about it, and because LCD displays have so many layers, when you in production and you curve the display, all the layers have to be aligned with each other. And so it's very difficult. It turns out it has a 3-meter radius, which is about 118 inches. So the goal is not to sit at any kind of radius of curvature. The goal is to have this immersive experience with a large display. And when the display is that big, it turns out it's a little bit annoying to have the flat edges, you know, off in a corner where the angle's not good and the distance isn't good. So this is just the right curvature in my experience for a display of that size. It's almost a meter wide. There's no room on your desk unless you're Tony Stark. There's no other room on your desk for another display. So
John, you're telling me I could get this display and plug it into my 5K iMac and use my 5K iMac sort of as a, you know, an auxiliary monitor with this.
Yeah, if you've got a desk the size of Tony Stark's lab, yes. But on my modest desktop, there's hardly room for anything else. But yes, you could do that.
And so this is, as someone who, I've seen video of you guys using these displays, and I'm very jealous of all this. Now, is this a Retina-style display? I mean, is it have that pixel density of a Retina display, or no?
Well, no. I talked about that in the review. It has a pixel density of 110 dpi.
Okay.
And if you consider that you're sitting about twice as far away from it as you would from, an iPad 2, which was the first Retina iPad, which is 264 dpi. So you're about twice as far away, and it has then the effective apparent resolution of 220 dpi, which is just about Retina.
Yeah, but my iMac, my 5K iMac has 218 ppi.
You can see the difference.
Okay.
Yeah, your display is sharper. However, yeah, the 34C is a very nice display visually. Okay. So it doesn't feel like you're looking at a fuzzy, jaggy display.
It's as sharp a display as I've ever used. I'm very pleased with it. I can't see the pixelation.
Oh, well, that's good. All right.
Yeah. Now, I've been looking at this display from the perspective of someone that would do a lot of design. And what I've noticed is that, for the most part, you're not going to pick up on pixels. But if you look at text on a 34C and then compare it to your 5K iMac, Dave,
yeah,
you will be able to see a difference in the text very clearly.
Okay,
your that makes sense. Your 5K iMac will render the text much crisper. Now, that said, the quality of text on this display is really good. And I found that if you go into the display settings,
there's an optimization for text.
Yes. And that totally made a difference. That was really important to do that, I felt. And
this 34-inch display retails for $1,299, but it's on Amazon for $778. And that's a couple hundred dollars less than Apple's achingly obsolete, embarrassingly old 2011 27-inch Thunderbolt display. So if you're looking for a partner display for your Mac and you just can't abide by Apple's 6 or 5-year-old Thunderbolt display, this is a modern, less expensive, glorious alternative.
It's a really nice display. Now, as far as color goes, I think overall color is really good on this display. And I'm spoiled because I judge all color displays based on HP's Dream Color technology. And that means no one's display, not even other HP displays, can really compare. But that said, the color quality on the 34C, I think, is really, really good. The only place it fell down for me was when I was looking at very light grays, like when you're looking at, say, a 5% gray. Mm-hmm. In some cases, like, so 5% or lower, in some cases, I could not see that gray on the screen. But I know it was there because I was comparing it to the, do you remember the 23-inch Apple Cinema display with the aluminum bezel all the way around?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
That's still a killer display.
Mm-hmm.
And that could show the grays that this display couldn't.
Interesting.
Yes. But other than that, the color has been great.
And what's the price on this thing?
$778 at Amazon.
Really? Really?
Yeah, wow. $778 on Amazon, and it comes with the adapter you need so that you can hook it to a Visa arm, and that's how I'm using it right now. You need a beefy one because it's a big display.
Weighs 17 pounds.
Yeah, and it has speakers built into it, which adds to the weight. The speakers are okay.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not.
I didn't like the speakers. I compared it to my Logitech X140s. I could easily tell the difference.
Oh, of course. Yeah, your Logitechs are leaps and bounds better than these speakers. These are functional speakers. If you're using them at your desk to listen to some music just kind of casually, or for your alert sounds, you're watching YouTube, stuff like that, right, they're fine. But if you want to like really listen to audio, you're not going to use the speakers built into this display.
Exactly.
Yeah. And putting this on a Visa arm, putting the adapter on was about a minute long process. That's it.
I'm using the stand. It feels like aluminum, but it's very sturdy metal, and it's just rock solid. When I grab the edges of the display to change the tilt, there is no movement anywhere except the tilt. You'd expect maybe the stand would rock a little bit. This is a very good stand. It's a heavy chunk of metal that keeps the display very, very stable. It's not vertically adjustable because it's so big and the stand has to be so strong.
But you can adjust the tilt.
But you can adjust the tilt, and it's very nice.
Yes. Cool. All right. So my advice is, if you're someone that's looking for the quality of a dream color display, but you just can't afford that, and so you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of color to get a lot of screen real estate, the 34C is a great choice.
And look for my review, because I've got lots of pictures of it, and you'll be in love with it immediately.
Yeah, you guys are making me want to like get a Mac Mini so that I have to plug a display into it.
Oh, my wife showed it to some of the professors at the college she works at, and they said, oh, yeah, we're buying it. It's on the purchase list. Yep,
there you go. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to stop waxing poetic about displays. John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Dave, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. It was fun.
And listeners, thank you for being here. And you know what? Give me some feedback. I want to know what you think about Apple potentially getting into the same market as Amazon Echo and Google Home. Are you interested in any of these products? I want to know. Shoot me a message on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. Shoot me an email, observations@macobserver.com, or leave comments in the show notes. I'm going to check all those places to hear what you guys have to think. Thanks for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.